Good morning. Thanks for all being here with us today. And you'll see in my slides as well, I also believe in cute children, but in this case, it's my daughter who's joining us this morning to illustrate the role of physical activity in a happy, healthy life. Catherine Bass is joining me from Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota, and neither of us have any financial relationships to disclose. And Catherine's going to tell us a little bit about Active Living Minnesota to get us underway.
Yes, very briefly, some context setting. I work for Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Minnesota in the Center for Prevention, and Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Minnesota is the largest health plan in Minnesota. We insure about 2.8 million members, 3,000 employees. We are a not-for-profit health plan, as are all health plans that operate in the state. The Center for Prevention, where I work, was established in 1998 with the proceeds from the landmark lawsuit against the tobacco industry that Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Minnesota and the state of Minnesota waged. This lawsuit paved the way for the Master Settlement Agreement and opened up the document archive. The Center for Prevention was established to tackle the root causes of diseases. We address tobacco use, reducing exposure to secondhand smoke, increasing physical activity, and healthy eating in the state for all Minnesotans. That's our charge, and that's what we use our dollars for. And through those efforts, we have developed local funding to communities, and the funding that I particularly work on, and Julia is going to be talking about the evaluation for today, is called Active Living Minnesota. We fund 8 communities in Minnesota to pursue organizational community capacity to increase that, to pursue policy systems and environmental level changes to support walking and bicycling. And Active Living, as you may or may not know, is really an effort to incorporate physical activity into our everyday lives, both through transportation and recreation. The funded communities, we have a good chunk of resources, but we don't have enough resources to fund every community in the state, so we had to be really strategic about who we selected. And through a competitive process, we intentionally selected a mixture of communities in the state to fund so that we would have local models and that virtually every sort of community in the state would have another to point to say, oh, that community's like me and they're doing this kind of work. So we funded you see the 2 counties down in the south, sort of southwestern corner of the state, the large blue spots. That's the Minneapolis-St. Paul metro area. So those are large populous counties in the metro area. There's also a county that's in greater Minnesota and several cities around the state. Those regions may be regional hubs. There's also small cities in rural areas. Some of the communities are funded through a lead agency that's a planning department. Some are through public health. There's at least one that's a not-for-profit organization, so we also intentionally selected a mixture of lead agencies. And a few of the communities, this is sort of our second iteration of funding, a few of the communities had received funding from us prior to this program, and so we're coming into the program with some additional capacity already. Oh, and I should say the largest community that we funded was Hennepin County, which is the county that houses Minneapolis. It's also the largest county in the state. And then our smallest funded community, that's actually an error. It's the city of Pipestone, which is down there in the southeastern corner of the state, and it has just under 5,000 people in a very rural area. So that gives you a sense of it, of all of that.
Hand it over to Julia. The Michigan Public Health Institute was contracted by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota to provide evaluation for this effort. My center at MPHI conducts evaluation of several different active living or physical activity or built environment initiatives that are funded by a variety of sources and work in a variety of communities. And there are a couple things that are really interesting about this work that we wanted to highlight today. I think that for all of the funders that we work with, they have kind of the shared goal of encouraging communities to use best practices, to drive their work by the research, to do that. But at the same time, they want the work to be owned by the community, to be driven by community interests and priorities, partnerships, and to really be owned at the community level. And that's a challenge. You know, you want to encourage them to do certain things while at the same time encouraging them to make their own decisions and do work that's important to their community and aligned with their community's needs and interests. And Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota has been very thoughtful about this in their approach to funding the community work that they're doing in the area of active living. And I think that there's some lessons to share that we've kind of generated through our evaluation of this work over the last several years. So again, MPHI is the evaluator for Active Living Minnesota and two previous Blue Cross Active Living projects. Our evaluation approach is collaborative. We are very interested in ensuring that we meet the needs of the funder, that we are listening to the communities regarding what they need and what they can take on as far as evaluation goes, and ensuring that we're producing information ultimately that's useful to the partners involved, that's actionable for the partners involved, that's not just evaluation for evaluation's sake. To date, our emphasis and our evaluation design has very much been on process and implementation. We'll be moving to looking more at outcomes in the next year or two. However, right now what we have is a lot of process and implementation data that we're learning from. And our evaluation orientation has very much been about listening and learning from the community's experiences. We listen to the stories that they have to tell, and we try to listen across communities to what's emerging as kind of themes in making this work happen in communities. Our evaluation output is very much about telling each community's story and then about generating those lessons from across the board. So Active Living Minnesota is about supporting communities and developing a comprehensive approach to promoting active living. And it's based on Active Living by Design's 5P Community Action Model, which includes these components that you might be familiar with: preparation, promotion, programs, policy, and physical projects. Blue Cross's approach has been to fund communities in a way that is guided but not prescriptive, and has worked toward kind of finding out what that means and finding a balance in there. So the work plans for each community are flexible. They don't all look the same. They're each unique. They're working on different types of things with different sets of partners, with a different timeline and set of strategies. So in that way, they're very community-driven, organic, but at the same time, they're driven by best practices, that they incorporate those things in active living that you would want to see incorporated into this work based on Active Living by Design's model. So some of the drivers of success to date that we're going to talk about are building strong partnerships and providing technical assistance that's just in time, tailored to community needs, and draws on the expertise of leaders in the field. Okay, so building strong partnerships. For each funded community, this is a critical piece of what they've been working on for the past several years. And I think that's something that's fairly unique about this funding approach is that Blue Cross has been patient and allowed communities to go through an intentional process of partnership building, of bringing folks to the table who need to be there. And their traditional partners and their non-traditional partners, the folks that have been harder to reach, that Blue Cross has given communities the time to get there in building their partnership based on the recognition that it takes a public health system to put this work into action. So they have partners from the city, the county, the business community, multicultural groups, hospitals, health agencies, community members are at the table, certainly community health programs, schools, health department, and the planning community all working together around the goals and objectives of this initiative. So as communities kind of got going with this partnership building work, what we noticed from the evaluation perspective was that they drew from their existing relationships, their existing partnerships, and those folks were at the table and engaged in meaningful ways. However, they had a much more difficult time engaging those non-traditional or new partners. So when Active Living Minnesota was funded, Blue Cross put in some guidance into the RFP on what partnerships meant and what partnerships should be in place into the RFP process. But they also put in place supports for partnership building that were, you know, directly intended to help address this issue of the challenge of engaging non-traditional partners. And some of the strategies that communities talk about and communities find useful were the presentations that they've done to for new partners. Bringing in experts has been pretty powerful for them, bringing in experts in active living and walkability, bikeability, and bringing those folks folks at the table to get them excited about this work and this type of initiative. Contracting for specific work. Of course, if you are able to write a subcontract and have that in place, that can be a powerful way of getting new folks involved to do specific things. Also, of course, building on existing relationships, so thinking about those networks that are in place within the community, so you have a partner that's been a partner with you for a long time. Who are that person's partners? And then promotions, media, community events, the types of strategies that get everyone kind of excited about active living and this type of work. Some of the high-octane strategies for building partnerships that we've noted in the evaluation include those on-site presentations and events that include experts, that really gets people fired up and engaged and interested. And also presenting best practices and the evidence base at community meetings and having sort of a selling approach to talking about active living and the benefits of this work for folks who have varied perspectives. Through this partnership building process, what communities have been able to do is create champions that are kind of outside of their direct circle, who are advocates in the community, who are leaders in the community that can facilitate and drive change in ways that the funded agencies might not be able to, which is particularly important at this point in time where they're moving from this partnership building work toward implementing physical projects and working toward policy change. At this point in their work, communities have really shifted their focus from building partnerships, which has been very successful for them. They've gotten those non-traditional partners to the table, and they feel like they have who they need at this point. And so now what they're looking at is how do you maintain that strong partnership? How do you keep folks involved over the long haul that it might take to get those policy and environmental changes to happen? So they've really shifted toward thinking about the importance of champions. And one of the things that they've talked about particularly lately is this idea of managing expectations that, you know, once you get everyone fired up about active living and making these changes in the built environment, they want it to happen now. And so when it takes a year, when it takes 2 years, when it takes 3 years to get there, it can be difficult to keep folks involved and at the table. And so they're developing strategies for managing expectations and communicating that message that it's a marathon, it's not a sprint, that this is going to take time and it's one step at a time. They've also done more work around this idea of setting priorities and getting focused. There are so many things that they could do, so many things partners are interested in and excited about, but they can't do all of those things and they can't do them all at once. So how you work within a partnership to figure out what the priorities are and to stay focused on a couple key objectives and key activities. The second driver of success that I wanted to speak to this morning that I think is fairly unique in this model is the technical assistance approach that Blue Cross has taken to this initiative. Their objective has been to build capacity and expertise around active living, and certainly that has to do with content, so it has to do with understanding complete streets, looking at safe routes to schools, all those types of things, but it also has to do with building other types of skills that partners need to be successful in community work. So communications, advocacy, sustainability is a focus now. So thinking about all those types of skills other than content that partners need to be successful. So the technical assistance design, as I spoke to early on, is flexible, just in time, and community-driven. So it's about bringing the expert resources to the table, bringing the best practices, the evidence base to the table, but in a way that matches where communities are and what they want to focus on and what they want to learn about. And it's doing that in multiple ways. So it's a multimodal approach to training. So having actual training events in person, having conference calls and convening folks electronically, bringing in experts to communities when they're needed, providing resources, so connecting communities with what else is out there and whatever they're focused on at that point in time. And then working one-on-one with communities around problem solving with specific challenges. They've also encouraged peer-to-peer learning. So each of these, some of the communities who have been funded through Blue Cross have been doing this work for 5 years. or more in some cases where they're building on existing things that they've been doing. And so there's a lot of learning that's occurred on the ground that folks can learn from one another about what they've accomplished and how they've gotten there. So Blue Cross has established some mechanisms for that kind of sharing. The technical assistance providers have been first and foremost the Blue Cross staff who've developed quite a lot of expertise in this area in their own right, and then bringing in experts on particular topic areas as needed. So there were a few drivers, thank you, of this particular strategy to providing technical assistance. The previous funding mechanism that preceded Active Living Minnesota, they used the same 5P model, and they found that it was a good fit. It made sense to communities. There were lots of pieces of that they could apply in their communities that it fit well. Certainly evidence-based, focused on best practices, and it made sense. However, the structure that was used in the previous initiative had some limiting factors to it. It felt prescriptive to the communities who were funded under that mechanism. The timeline felt prescriptive. The activities felt prescriptive. And so they felt like they were trying to match what they were doing to what this overall approach and structure was, instead of sort of generating what they wanted to do, what they felt fit for their community, what their partners were interested in, having the support and resources to get that done. So it was constraining. Communities experienced it as constraining, and it took them a long time to kind of understand what the approach was, what the model was about, what the structure was about, and it kind of hindered their progress. So Active Living Minnesota really kept what worked and then changed the pieces of that funding approach that didn't work as well. They kept the idea of evidence-based practice, but added the idea of practice-based evidence, that there can be this learning from communities, that communities have a lot of knowledge and resources and expertise that you want to foster and bring to the surface. And so that's how Active Living Minnesota was structured. So the TA, as I've talked about, is flexible, personalized to each community, it's accessible, and it supports partnerships and the unique work plan that each community has in place. The satisfaction with the current technical assistance model is very high. That's what we found consistently in our evaluation over the past years of this effort. And the types of technical assistance that communities perceive as most effective include access to active living experts, especially when the experts are able to give presentations and workshops within their own community. They also appreciate that opportunity to learn from peers, to learn from that practice-based evidence. And open and frequent communication with Blue Cross staff, who, again, know the evidence and understand the communities that they work with. So they're that nice balance between what the communities are, what they need, what they can do, and what the evidence-based is. At this point with Active Living Minnesota, they're ready to face some new challenges. The communities have 2 years of funding remaining, and as I said, that they're moving toward what we're calling the advanced implementation stage, which focuses more on policy and physical infrastructure work. And the same token on the evaluation side, we're looking at understanding the outcomes of this work, understanding the outcomes for communities and for individuals within those communities. And again, the next challenge will also be about sustainability. What will these communities do to keep their work going after the initiative has wrapped up? And that's what I have today.
We have time for one question.
The funding is for 5 years, and they are completing their third year, and I would say that the mid part of this year, their partnerships were pretty well established, but it varied from community to community because they really started at different places, and that was sort of incorporated into the RFP and the design as well, recognizing that communities were going to take different sorts of periods of time to do the partnership building work, but it took years.
So the timeline is pretty flexible then?
Yeah.
I would also say that we designed it so that they could spend, I think partnership development can happen continuously and always needs to be attended to, as anybody who's ever been a part of a coalition or a collaboration, you know, that sort of interest comes and goes, it wanes, and you need to continue to keep people engaged. So we really said that partnership development initially should be kind of at a high boil, and then you kind of put it on the back burner and keep it at a low simmer, but it's not something you can ever turn off.
Thank you. Yeah, and I think it's interesting in comparison with other funding mechanisms where you'll either have the partnership needs to be established before you're ever awarded the grant, or you have 3 months to establish your partnerships, a very different sort of mindset about what partnership does in this type of work, making it much more central to what it's supposed to accomplish.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.